come together with these words from the Reverend Lindsay Bates. Let us open our minds to the challenge of reason. Open our hearts to the healing of love. Open our lives to the calling of conscience. Open our souls to the comfort of joy. Astonished by the miracle of life, grateful for this gift of fellowship, and confident in the power of our living faith, we are here gathered. Come, let us worship together. Mike and I should add Sung Hee, have a little bit of a production for you today. So it's called Jonah the Jazz Man, I think. Jonah Man Jazz, right? Sort of. Here we go. Mike?
Nineveh city was a city of sin. The jazzin' and the jivin' made a terrible din. Beat groups playin' a rock and roll. And the Lord, when he heard it, said, bless my soul. The people wouldn't listen, danced night and day. No time for work, no time to pray. They went on dancing by day and night, till the Lord, he said, well, this ain't right. The Lord, he pondered a subtle plan. He looked around for a righteous man. Saw Jonah sitting beneath the pineapple tree. And the Lord, he said, that's the man for me. A righteous man that I can trust to raise this city from out the dust. The man that's sitting beneath the pineapple tree. Sure, 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 he's the man for me.
Well, I'm not so sure. Well, this Nineveh, it was a really bad place. The people there had become very wicked. And God was looking for someone to tell them to change their ways. And if they did not, he was going to destroy them. And he found this Jonah, and he told him to go to Nineveh. God said, you tell them, they've got 40 days to change their ways, or I will destroy them. But Jonah was like, gee whiz, why me? They're not going to listen to me. You've got to be crazy. They're our enemies. They've done horrible things to us. I don't want to save them. I don't want you to forgive them. Why don't you just destroy them now without any warning? That's what they deserve. Well, there wasn't any reply. And Jonah was pretty afraid and also angry, so he decided that instead of going to this bad place, Nineveh, he'd just run away to some far-off place where God wouldn't find him. So he found a boat. It was going to the far-off city of Tarshish. So he jumped on the boat. Captain said, fine. They set sail. But once they got out to sea, some trouble started. There was a terrible storm with huge waves. It tore down the sails and it cracked the mast, and the boat was in danger of sinking. The crew was very scared. They'd never been in a storm that bad. They threw the cargo from the ship overboard to make it lighter. But things only got worse. Then the captain gathered his crew and said, you know, there's something wrong. God must be angry at one of us. And they all looked at Jonah and said, who are you and what have you done? Jonah said, I'm a Hebrew. I guess I disobeyed my God who told me to go to Nineveh. But instead I ran away with you. That's why we've got this terrible storm, I guess. Cast me overboard and save yourself. Well, the men didn't move to do so. They rowed harder to try and keep the boat afloat. But finally the captain said, Jonah, it's no use. We must throw you overboard or we'll all perish. So they threw Jonah into the water. And here's what happened next.
When Jonah sank into the sea, he closed his eyes and prayed, "Oh Lord, I'm very sorry that your word I have disobeyed. If you will only come and save me, I will do as you command. Instead of treading water, let me tread upon the land. Go down, Jonah, deep in the ocean. Go down, Jonah, far from the shore." When Jonah had repented him, the Lord, he didn't fail. Although the sea was tropical, he sent along a whale. It promptly swam right up to Jonah, and its mouth was open wide. Before he'd even noticed it, poor Jonah was inside. Go down, Jonah, deep in the ocean. Go down, Jonah, far from the shore. And after swimming very hard for 3 days, if not four, the whale came near to Nineveh and grounded on the shore, whereat it gave a little shudder as its jaws were widely flung, and Jonah came a-strolling out upon its mighty tongue. Go down, Jonah, deep in the ocean. Go down, Jonah, far from the shore. Go down, Jonah, far from the ocean. Go down, Jonah, safe once again on the shore.
Well, Jonah got to Nineveh. Maybe not the way you'd expected he'd travel, but he got there. And he went and told the people, who were very bad, to give up their evil ways. And believe it or not, they did. Everyone obeyed, and God forgave them and did not destroy the city. And the people of Nineveh celebrated.
We had a wonderful party, and Jonah had a whale of a time. But now that we've really repented, everything's gonna be fine.
But Jonah did not celebrate. He was angry, and he left the city and sat on a rock in the sun to pout. He thought it was not fair. These were really bad people. They should have been destroyed. They deserved it. Jonah just continued to be angry, sat in the hot sun, hoping it would just destroy him. But one morning, Jonah woke up to find a beautiful tree had grown up, which gave him shade. He sat under the tree and enjoyed the shade. But the next day he woke up, a giant worm had eaten all the leaves on the tree and killed it. So right away Jonah called to God, "God, why did you send the worm to eat the tree? I feel sorry for the tree. I'm angry that you killed it." And God said, "Jonah, do you think it's right to feel angry about the death of this tree? You didn't plant the tree. You didn't take care of it. You know, I watched over the people of Nineveh for a long time, and they were real slow to learn right from wrong. You were concerned about this tree, but should you not have had the same love and concern for the people of Nineveh? There comes a time to forgive, and holding on to anger like you're doing will only make you miserable." So the lesson of the story of Jonah, which is the lesson of the high holy day of Yom Kippur, which folks just celebrated in the Jewish tradition yesterday, is that even when someone does something bad, or even when you do something wrong, there comes a time to forgive other people and to forgive yourself and to start all over again. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time we have been struck, we have struck out in anger without just cause.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
for falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For losing sight of our unity.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
When I was a child, there was something strange in my family. It's not something that I have shared before because it seemed rather embarrassing. People didn't talk about it out of the family. On my father's side of the family, there were numerous siblings. Two of them, two brothers, did not speak to their mother, nor did they speak to each other. It had involved a dispute over a family business long before my time. Each thought that they had been treated unfairly. And their behavior overshadowed all family events with a sense of brokenness and sadness. It was always there. You couldn't invite one to an event if the other one was coming. At times, particularly when there was a death or a wedding in the family, another family member would try to bridge the gap. But it would not happen. When one would arrive at something, the other would leave. If they were at the same wedding or funeral, which was rare, one would sit in one corner of the church, the other in the opposite. Now, my parents got along with everyone, but still, I learned early the heavy burden anger can place over a family. Essentially, the two brothers, well, eventually, sort of reconciled with their mother, but they went to their grave heavy with anger at each other, having not spoken a word to each other for nearly 50 years. They were never able to let go of their anger and forgive. Now their story ends pretty much like the story of Jonah. They were not going to have any part of this forgiveness reconciliation stuff. They held on to their anger so tightly that it consumed them. I think it was C.S. Lewis who said these words about anger, that it's a delicious experience, like feasting on a great roast. But when you're done picking it away at the meat, you discover the carcass you devoured was your own. Now, in my conversation with many others, I find this situation is not unique. Just this week, some of you, as some folks at the first service told me, may have heard, as I did on NPR, a story about a brother and a sister. The brother had insulted the sister's cooking, and their anger lasted a lifetime. No, in fact, it lasted longer than that. To this day, their children, the next generation, don't speak to each other. They hold anger towards each other, even though they have never had any encounters with each other. The story demonstrates how infectious this powerful force of holding on to anger truly is. Now, before we go further, I want to be clear. Getting angry is not always a bad thing. There is justifiable anger. But being unable to move on from anger, to let go of it, can be incredibly destructive in our lives and in the lives of those around us as well. Another family story came to mind recently for me. It actually came to mind when I was working on the program booklet for our Connector dedication. I was so thrilled that many of the ministers who were ordained here were going to be able to come and be part of it. And I was typing their names and their dates of ordination in. And I came to Sylvia Stalker's name and I typed it in and I typed 2004. And my mind immediately traveled back to that day. It was a Sunday, and that evening I was at a dinner in Bolton, actually, after the ordination. I received a call there telling me my cousin Rosemary was in intensive care at Brigham and Women's Hospital and wanted to see me. Some of you I've shared some of this with, but some of you actually met her and her partner, Lisa. They, in my first couple of years here, they had attended a couple of times. They were here at my ordination here. But Rosemary lived with Malcolm and I for a while and was very dear to us. And Rosemary had battled a very long illness. And when I got to the hospital, I knew that the end was near. And during my visit, she told the doctor that she was tired and it was time to stop the extraordinary treatments. She was clear in her wishes and lucid, very weak, and just wanted her partner and me to be there. So I spent most of Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday night by her bed, giving her partner a little relief to get a cup of coffee or some fresh air. Rosemary had a very strong faith, not the same faith as mine, but a strong faith. And so I sang some of her favorite hymns for her, and I prayed with her, and I read passages of scripture to her that I knew were important for her. We reminisced about good and bad times when our lives had connected and come together. And sometimes we just stayed silent for quite a long time. And after a long period of silence, she looked at me and said, "I've just finally forgiven John." Now, that's not his real name, but it was quite a surprise to me because I never knew she had any issue with John. And Rosemary was one of the kindest, most forgiving people I knew. Surely something very hurtful had happened between them. I still don't know what it was, and I doubt that I ever will, because it's not mine to know. But what was clearly important to her was that she said those words aloud. It was a very powerful moment. I felt something lift in the room. I sensed that somehow, as sick as she was, a certain burden was taken from her. There was a greater sense of peace in the room than before. 24 hours later, I was holding her as she took her last breath. And after that, I drove home in the car in a very exhausted state, and my mind sort of wandering all over the place. And from somewhere, this quote from Jean-Paul Sartre came into my head. If you're not already dead, forgive. Rancor's heavy. It's worldly. Leave it on earth. Die light. I now knew in this very raw space I was in the profound truth of those words. And I imagined that surely Sartre had also had an experience with someone similar to mine, with my cousin Rosemary, in order to write those words. We all experience a variety of hurts, some small and some quite large. Even in the best of relationships between two people, from time to time, we hurt each other. And certainly we get hurt. Maybe by a coworker, a friend, even a total stranger. And when the pain is at its worst, what we often want to do is hurt back. And you can make a reasonable argument for hurting back. If you're the victim of a crime or serious abuse or a betrayal, a certain kind of justice would suggest that it's appropriate to hurt back. It's a path we as individuals and as a society frequently do choose. When we travel down this road, it can become a recurring sort of tit-for-tat situation, maybe even a way of life. It seems to me that the longer we go down the route, the more intractable it becomes. I fear that that's a good description, actually, of the present situation in the Middle East and in other dangerous parts of the world. But there's another route, and it's the route of forgiveness. In her book, A New Song, Jan Coran says, "Forgiveness is giving up my right to hurt you because you have hurt me." Forgiveness is giving up my right to hurt you because you have hurt me. It doesn't mean that the other person, the one who hurts you, gets off scot-free. It doesn't mean that there's not some kind of restitution that should be made. Forgiveness does not mean that you overlook the injustice of the situation. But what it does mean is that you have chosen for yourself a path of liberation. It means you let go of the resentment. For resentment can only really hurt you. It has little effect on the person who's done you wrong. In a sermon by one of my colleagues, Stephanie Nichols, she describes harboring resentment as like giving yourself a dose of poison and then waiting for the other person to die. Doesn't work. I like that. When we harbor resentment, we primarily hurt ourselves. When we forgive, we free ourselves of the weight of that resentment, which just allows us to leave behind and move forward with our lives. In large measure, forgiveness is something we do for ourselves, not for other people. Although certainly their lives can be improved by our forgiveness as well. And just as sure as each of us here have been wronged by someone else, we've also been the person who committed the wrongs. We all have done things that we should not have done, I'm sure. And we've all failed to do things that we should have done. Both our actions and our inactions have hurt others. And I believe there's an equally heavy weight upon us when we're on the other side of the scale, when we've not sought forgiveness for the things we've done wrong. Guilt can have the same immobilizing effect as does anger. You know, in the Hebrew tradition, each year on Yom Kippur, Jews are invited to right the wrongs they've committed, to face up to their failings and to atone for them, to be prepared to forgive or to be forgiven means we need to connect with some of the painful things within us. So how do we move ahead? How do we lift the weight of not forgiving or not being forgiven? At the beginning of the High Holy Days, there's a little ritual that some observant Jews practice. It's called tashlik, which literally means to cast away. And they throw breadcrumbs into a river, which represents the casting away of the wrongs they've done that year so they can begin the year anew. It also means casting away the anger and the resentment that they hold towards others who have injured them. It represents a self-forgiveness as well as a forgiveness for others. It's a beautiful symbolic act. And wouldn't it be wonderful if it was that easy? I think Yom Kippur is central to the Jewish calendar. It's the culmination of the High Holy Days. It's positioned right at the start of the new year because it's not easy. And we need to set aside a time to examine our lives and work at forgiveness, whether it's this time or other time. We need to let go of the past by forgiving others and then forgiving ourselves. Have you taken some time to look back at your life? Are you heavy with resentment towards someone? You know, life is not always fair or just. Things will go wrong in our life. We will at times be very justified in our anger. We will have arguments. Marriages will break up. Friends or co-workers will betray us. Sometimes we'll get hurt. And sometimes we'll hurt others. And I suspect everyone here has done both. It's what happens next that matters. Will you hold on to the anger, the resentment, the guilt, or will you let it go? It is this inability to forgive and be forgiven that is what breaks the bonds of human relationship. Even at times makes us unable to move on to new relationships. Where on the other hand, we grow in love and in our ability to love when we're forgiven and when we forgive. It's hard to let go of anger. Sometimes it offends our sense of justice. Sometimes our sense of righteousness. Sometimes our sense of pride. It's also hard to let go of guilt and to accept forgiveness when we've caused others pain. That's why Yom Kippur is there each year. Of course, we need to do all we can to make amends for the wrongs we've committed. Of course, we need to insist that our human rights are protected and we're respected as individuals of worth and dignity. But in the end, whether we are the victim or the perpetrator, whether we are totally in the right or totally in the wrong, if we wish to go on and live lives that are meaningful, lives of love and caring, we need to do something that can be truly very difficult. We need to let it go. My prayer for you this Yom Kippur is that you will do that. My prayer is that you will forgive yourself and those who have wronged you, and that you will begin again.